Yo. Can you hear me? You listening to
What a week. Eita, welcome to an extraordinary roundtable and edition of Wow, What a Week. This is actually Louis Vega's idea. I'd take all the credit, but I don't know how to do that. So the idea was, Louis, you're in town. I'll come to your hotel. We'll set up. We'll do an interview. Louis's like, bring everyone. And I think that is the one thing about every single person on this roundtable today is they've got a heart of bring everyone. And it's probably for that reason that they continue to gig 30, 40 years into their careers. So welcome to an extraordinary roundtable on Wow, What a Week. We're hanging out with Julian. Is it Gomes or Gomez?
You always ask me this.
We're asking for your fans who fight about this.
For sure, it's Gomez. But so with the S, yes. With the S.
Because in South Africa, Gomes. Goes.
Like last night, I got stopped by Metro. Yeah. The guy was calling me Cums. I was like, it's not Cums, it's Gomez. I was like, what? It's Gomez, bro.
Yes, sir. One of my heroes, Oskido, is in the building. Oskido, thank you for joining us, my dude.
Eita, eita.
Greg Maluka, my co-facilitator.
The guy?
The guy that gave me the job at YFM. Msaki is in the building. She spent all her money on all of our CDs. So she's here to collect.
How's everybody going to refund?
We have the legendary Louis Vega in the building. Louis, thank you very much. And thanks for the great idea for us to just all sit and chop it up.
Oh, man, you know, I had to just, you know, we used to do that in Miami. We always, you know, in New York, we always bring everybody together, making records together. So I figured, you know, why not get a nice, group of friends that I've been working with over the years and I've known over the years. And
absolutely.
New ones, older ones, and, you know.
Yes, sir.
Feels good.
Yeah. And on the far right, my other two heroes, I call him my father. He's the father of Deep House, Vinny Da Vinci. Vinny, thank you for joining us, my dude.
Yo, fresh.
Yes, sir.
Nice one.
Why are you putting on a voice?
Well, it's friends of someone like you, huh?
And whenever the cops come knocking because we're making too much noise, you need to send a white guy. That's why Christmas
I'm your guy.
Is here. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
It's Chris White.
Don't tell him. Don't tell him he's one of us. Lucky, I'm going to throw it to you because I don't want to be manager and team and everything else. But once in a while, I'll jump in.
Yeah, so I think the first place I want to start really is Saki. Is Rio 50. I only did one comp. I think they sold it. How much did we sell it for when we did the What's Fed Pussycat 3?
30 rand.
Was it about 100 bucks? Probably.
Give or take, yeah?
Yeah. This is 50% of my...
Thank you.
And I mean, I got 20% on that record, but anyway.
And Saki, you bought only up to Fresh House Flavor 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There you go. Please give her money.
Thank you.
I owe you nothing now.
House Africa. Yeah. Okay.
Don't say...
Oskido owes me the most money. Oskido Church gives to all my money in high school. But I was very cool every time I came back from the holidays or an out weekend, and I'd come back with a new house fresh flavor of 5.
Yeah.
And then also I would also find like DJ Bubbles, like all this other weird beautiful old house. So I became a tastemaker because of your compilations, guys.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's take it to a moment. So this is 1998. I just want to see where everyone was at this particular moment. It's 1998, it's October, somewhere around the 20th.
Yeah.
And just to see if everybody remembers this moment the same. So, Louis, you walk into the YFM studio and Fresh is on air.
No, 99.
99.
Yeah.
Okay. 1999, you walk into the studio, you've got your record bag. You're going to play for the first time in South Africa. How do you remember that moment?
Wow. Well, you know, we're in the studio from the radio, and I see all these people in there. I'm like, oh, my goodness. And it was my agent at the time, Ali, is like, Louis, they want you to play at the station. It's just like an hour. You know, it's live. You know, vinyl in those days. And I came in and I saw everybody just around and like chilling in the room, you know, staring at me and stuff. And I'm like, oh, goodness.
So many black people.
Then I'm finding out, you know, this is like the cream of the crop of, you know, the I would say the godfathers, who later became the godfathers, you know, of the music. You know, it was just, it was a beautiful feeling because everybody was smiling.
Yeah.
And, you know, one that's not here, Monday, I'll never forget his smiling face, you know what I mean? And all you guys and just the warmth, you know, I just felt like I was at home. You know, I'm from the Bronx, so I grew up, you know, in the streets up in the Bronx, South Bronx. So, you know, we all stuck together. You know, it was a crew. It was a family, a group of friends for many years. And I had that feeling when I came here. I just had that total feeling right when I was in that room. So, you know, when I played the music, I think I came with the guys knew my sound because, you know, they were already playing Masters That Work sounds and stuff like that. But, you know, and Kenny and I were into our 9th year of making music already by that time. So we had a ton of records out. But it was just everybody has so many questions and stuff. And I'm talking to everybody at the end of the night, them finding out who everybody was and what they did. And it was just really the beginning of a friendship that's now 26 years with all you guys.
We were laughing about this the other day, just reminding each other of the song, the first song that you played, before I get comments from all the other guys of how they remember those moments or that particular moment. But we talked about the music and the first song that you played, but also you spoke about, oh shit, I'm going to Africa. Maybe I should bring some of this African stuff. Do you want to come?
You know what? Yeah, I was coming to Africa and I said, yo, I got to play Fela. I was all excited. And I'm like, hold on, Fela's from Nigeria. Maybe they have to know him. When I came, it's like, nobody really, that's not what everybody wanted to hear. I said, okay, yeah. Hold up. You know. So, you know, I flipped it. But at that time, we had a big record, Femi Kuti, Truth Don't Die.
Yeah.
It was that exact time. So that was a big record for us in New York and around the world and stuff. You know, so when I played that was, you know, because Kerry Chandler, I think, did that remix. We did a remix too, but I was always playing Kerry.
Kerry Chandler, yeah.
Right? Yeah, I always played that version. And, you know, then when I was playing all the other records, I think one record that really reminds me of when I first came out here, besides the ones you guys made big hits like Summer Days and all that, you know, when I played Burning.
Yeah.
By Pepe Rada. It just was a whole mood, you know, in the room.
Yes.
You know, anywhere you played it. You know, when I played it at the station, because I think I probably played it on that show.
Yeah.
And when I played it at the big show with 30,000 people, which blew me away.
Lazarus.
I think that was the biggest crowd I played for at that time. You know,
Chris, you were in the studio.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Your recollection?
Forget your mic, Chris.
Well, for me, it was like, yeah. You know, it's just, Louis, like, it was an icon, you know, musically, just everything, you know, DJing, you name it, you know. And, yeah, man, for me, it was just the music, man. I want those records. I made a plan that day with the sound people to make sure that I record the set. And I did get it right, and I actually recorded that set.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The set from...
From the station.
From
Nazareth. Oh, yeah, from Nazareth, yeah. Nazareth.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, so for me, it was like, I got to do this,
yeah,
man.
But
yeah, man, I'll never forget that day, yeah.
Who was asking us the other night if we were on CDJs? Like, how many CDJs were you playing on? And we're like, no. There was like 4 12-10s.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. On that night at Nazareth. It wasn't CDJs. Vinny, you caused chaos here with House Africa and brought all those records. And made Msaki poor. You were in the studio on that day as well.
Yeah.
And the reason I want to go to this particular day is that actually everybody was, bar two people, was in that room. Mm-hmm. Tell us your recollection of the day.
For me, I think I came slightly late. Louis was already in the studio, but walking into the studio,
right,
I could hear the soul playing, right. And I love this record. Right?
Yeah.
I think it was the You Can Do It, Baby. George Benson.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this is it.
Yeah.
So, I was playing that record almost every weekend at the clubs. It was my favorite record, actually. And yeah, walking in, then I saw everybody. Like, a lot of DJs. Some standing even outside, looking through the window. I was like, wow. And I'm like, I wonder how Louis is feeling when everybody's like, just around here. But yeah, man, I think, yeah. I think for me, looking at back at that time, it changed a lot of people, a lot of DJs' perspective on DJ and the music as a whole. I mean, the whole outlook, how you look at music, how you play music. I mean, yeah, same here. I mean, I was like, oh, that's how he plays. I got more inspiration from that. So, yes.
Oskido?
Yeah. I wasn't there in that room.
Were you not in that?
No. Okay. I was at Nasrec.
Yes,
yes.
This is when I first experienced the Louis Vega movement. And this is when we really started seeing a DJ bringing more of the technicality when it comes to DJing, making, you know, DJing as skillful. I mean, the art skill which he brought in there, it was amazing. And I remember at one stage, people were just standing like this. Remember those days when not cell phones, or else you're going to see, you know, like what's happening nowadays. But people were like standing. And I remember Louis was worried. I think he came to say, they're not dancing.
He's like, hey, they're not dancing. They're dancing. What's going on?
Yeah. And people were just like, but just because of, we've never seen something like that. I mean, when it came to technicality, we've always respected Christos in terms, he's the guy who brought in vinyl for us. And he's always a guy who was always looked upon when he was playing his mixing and his technicality. But that night, Louis rocked. I remember, I think it was a 4-hour set.
Yeah.
So I remember the last hour, Max comes to me, says, no, but he's fucking, he's messing you guys. sorry. Yeah, exactly. It was like that. He bought the coin. Yeah, and I missed everything. And I remember at the poker, I used to drink Jack Daniels. So I had a full of Jack Daniels.
You spilled my coffee.
Ah, don't worry, my man. Don't worry. Right, let's go on.
That's cool. We are.
So now I used to drink Jack Daniels. Then I went for a tour like, aka. Max says, in. Yeah. Can I go in, man? And I'm saying, then Louis, I think we'd arranged. Then Louis and had arranged. Remember those days? I used to love the mic.
Yeah.
And now
jumped on the mic.
Louis says, you come on the mic, man. You come on the mic, man. And I'm thinking like this. But you know, I had to go in and take a lot of these Jack Daniels shorts. Then from there I was up. A microphone. Remember Louis? Then I went on the mic, you know, just to hype the crowd, you know, hype it up. And for me, I mean, that was the moment which made me connect with you. Yeah. And I remember even after that event, I think went clubbing, wanted to take you around to Alex, but no, went to the studio. What an experience, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for the music.
Same here.
I was actually too young, bro. I was too young to get into the clubs or anything. But my experience from growing up was like from the YMAX. Yeah. I remember YMAX and the press. So there was like all the pictures of the events and stuff. But also listening to YFM. So obviously Tato and Tato, I think Rude Boy Paul, Oscar was there. Was Kabzela? Like all of that era, that whole era, that's how we connected. So we connected via Louis through you guys. So like you brought Louis to us and then we kind of started figuring out Louis. And then from Louis went deep into like the New York scene and started figuring out people like, well, not from New York specifically, but like Ron Train. Then we keep going deeper and deeper into like what was coming from America.
Yeah.
So we actually learned from you guys, like what you guys brought to us, what you like curated for us. So
that's my experience. I would agree. Yeah, I would agree. I would say that my introduction to you, Mr. Vega, was through your friends here. But I think also just tracing the history of house music, I connected with it because it was this music that had a place for soul, and it was a music that seemed like there was an intention to really connect with live musicians as well. I mean, if you casually mentioning George Benson, the way that I hear you talking about the, you know, musicians, gospel musicians, jazz musicians, and the fact that there's a relationship and a reverence from them to you as well, there's a vice versa respect. something that I really I'm missing in this generation, because a lot of our friends, I'm a band leader of a lot of musicians that play session, that play jazz. And I'd say Nduduzo Makatini is an anomaly in that space where he knows and he respects people that make electronic music. But we struggle to get our peers to connect with the electronic music. There's a skepticism and there's a new purism that's happened to the younger generation, where what you guys have and the fact that you've got such jazzy, instrumental, organic roots in music is a, it's something that I wish could come back a bit more. And the, I mean, the thing that went and sent me down a barrel of looking for what house music used to be was also the way that it interacted with the vocal. And it made me feel like there's a space for me as a storyteller in this music that was so drenched in soul. And it's the formative sound is from all of you, actually, that made me interested in house. Otherwise, I wasn't coming.
Yeah. But it's funny how you talk about, not funny, but interesting how you talk about how house influenced you. We were talking about Kwaito being heavily influenced by house music, and how, you know, the slowing down of the records and throwing of lyrics, you know, before guys started to actually produce music. I mean, that's your era, right? That's where you started. Louis, you were saying that it was interesting, the style of house that was playing in South Africa around that time, you know, was more kind of your Glen Underground kind of vibe. So it was deep and moody.
Larry Heard. Yeah, I heard a lot of Larry Heard.
Frankie Knuckles. I mean, we played a lot of Frankie Knuckles back then. So I guess there was always kind of this blend of jazz and you know, kind of like gospel church type of vibe, but also kind of like the deep sort of vibe. But fresh, the Latin vibe was you and Louis' fault. Because a lot of the Latin flavors, whilst we were kind of exposed to it, you fell in love with it and you insisted on it on radio.
You know what? I think between myself and Glenn Lewis, we dared to take Latin house at the time, where a lot of guys were scared to go.
Yeah.
And also because we're working, obviously, with House Africa, Tim and Vinny. Tim and Vinny are probably the most underrated A&R people of any generation.
Yeah.
Because often we think A&R, we think singers. Yeah. But, you know, for you to agree that this will work on this compilation CD takes a special ear.
Yeah.
And I don't think Vinny or Tim get enough credit for that. Because I can tell you right now, if we loved a Latin house song, but it was shit, they would have said, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But, I mean, I think the fact that they trusted us and we trusted them and we worked hand in glove is how that sound took off. In fact, the big debate right now is, what are the origins of Afro house? And many could argue that's when it started, this train started taking off.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about the origins of, and the origins of anything for me is very tricky, especially in a creative environment.
Sure.
I saw a debate online as well, just about Afro house and where is it from and who started it and who came up with it. And my response has always been, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, where it started. I mean, what is it doing now and what are we doing with it? I mean, is it important, Charlie, where things start, or how do you feel about that?
I think throw that to Mr. Vega. He's the right guy to give us it.
I think for purposes of history not being distorted or people being written out of history, I think it's important for there to be a sober recollection or telling of any story.
Right.
Minus the emotions.
Yeah.
We'll look at the timelines just for history, for reasons of history.
Right.
Otherwise, we are going to be written out of history books. Already there's a big debate where Nigerians think Amapiano's from Nigeria. And if you let any narrative run away long enough, it becomes the truth. So I think it's important that we nail down who was ground zero when it comes to our house.
Louis, your thoughts on ground zero?
You know, I think I played so much music. I started DJing at 13, so I'm DJing in 1978, you know what I mean? I was there when disco was there. I was there when hip hop started, you know, right in my neighborhood, actually. You know, you had Afrika Bambaataa, Jazzy J, Red Alert. The first DJ who took me under his wing was Jazzy J. But they all played all kinds of records. You know, even before hip hop, it was rock, jazz, funk, soul, break beats. The beats in the middle of the songs when they used to extend them and scratch them, and then rapping over it. You know, I was there in the middle of that, in the middle of disco. You know, my uncle, being a famous salsa singer, Hector Lavoe, in Fania All-Stars. So, you know, African music was in there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? African music, it all comes from Africa in the first place. The rhythms, everything. So it's in the Fania records. I'm hearing it in the background. I'm hearing it here. But when house music started, I would say 84, something like that, there were a few records that, for me, we called it tribal.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, okay, Jungle Wands. If you listen to a record like Jungle Wands, yeah, and you hear the doom, 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 you know, those chants and all that. I mean, it felt African to me. Yeah. You know what I mean? When I heard Casey Flight, Voices, that beat, you know what I'm saying? Those were the early records that inspired me. And there were disco ones too, Point Zero. I mean, I could name you Cerrone. I mean, you know, all these records Todd Terry sampled, from back in disco. They all had African elements, you know, in the rhythm, it was in the sounds, you know what I'm saying? And to us, that was more like, it was tribal.
Yeah.
We called it tribal before that. You know, and there's so many other producers that I'm not naming, and DJs and artists that put out records at that time. But when I came and did my first version of it, or Kenny and I, I'm sorry, you know, as Masters at Work, and we did a record like Love and Happiness.
Yes.
With India. Yeah. You know, it was River Ocean featuring India. What we wanted to do was make one of those tribal, because they never really had a song on it. Casey Flight was a rap. It was like a hip house thing, but it was the instrumental we were playing, as well as his version, but it was that instrumental of that beat. And we were playing all these records that didn't have like a song on it. So with India, we were like, let's make a song and let's bring in that tribal sound, you know, what we feel, our rhythms, and, you know, what we're feeling out of us, and then put in the Yoruba chants in it.
Yeah.
You know, which come from Africa. And then let's finish it off with you know, house. Let's take it. Love and Happiness. You know, let's do that gospel thing. You know what I mean?
Man, that Love and Happiness.
So we combined all those elements with that song. So we were a part of it, you know, doing, when we did that thing, Sumsai Say for Todd Terry, it was our version.
Right.
That was the one that, you know, kicked it and went worldwide like that for him. You know what I mean? So those are records that we were a part of.
Yeah. Okay, so you're ground zero.
No, I'm not taking that. I'm not ground zero. You know, then you had Osunlade.
Yes.
You had Ron Trent. You had Joe Clozel. You had, I mean, I could name you Tammy Regisford. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If anything, you know, even for me, for house music, for the New York style of that music, Tammy Regisford and Boy Jarvis got to get credit, man. They had The Music's Got Me in 1982.
Yeah.
If you listen to that song, The Music's Got Me on Prelude Records, that's like a house song.
Yeah.
If you listen to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to give props to Timmy Regisford, Boy Jarvis, our keyboardist, who came up with all those great bass lines and those grooves, you know, and Merlin Bob and you know, and Tony Humphries, who was the Pied Piper of all this music in Jersey, and Larry Levan. I mean, you know, we can go there. We can go to Walter Gibbons, who played in the 70s, and he had Francois as a drummer in the corner of the club, and he was the one that brought a lot of those tribal beats into from the disco records, taking the breaks and editing them, making them longer.
Yeah.
You mean, so to me, those are just part of the seeds. You know, there's no first to me, because then there's different hybrids and then the different countries making the music with that style, you know, but now today, yes, you know, South Africa has a lot to do with Afro House. I mean, it's incredible where it's gone.
Yeah.
And then the styles that are coming from here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, where you have a three-step, you have Amapiano. You know, I like three-step because it's like a bridge between Amapiano and house, you know what I mean, and Afro House. You know what I mean? So there's all these things happening now. I mean, but I think, I mean, the origins, it's really hard to tell, because different places around the world where all these DJs and producers were making music that had these African elements.
Yeah.
I know you guys will all remember this track because we all tried to break dance. There was a song by George Kranz, Dindada. Dindada.
Dindada. Yeah. Jeez, how old are you?
Many could argue. I mean, that was on break dance. one break in one, I think.
Yeah.
This is back in 83, 84. So, I mean, that is how far back tribal goes. I remember Todd Terry sampled Manu Dibango.
Of African Bambata.
Huh? Yes. Todd Terry sampled Manu Dibango on A Day in the Life.
Yeah.
That Makosa, Makosa.
Yeah. Yeah, So Makosa, you know, Nubel.
Yes.
Manu Dibango, you know.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. He came to New York, he played with the Fania All-Stars and did it in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. And you were there.
That was African and Latin coming and Latinos coming together. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To see stuff like that. And to those are early inspirations for it. You know what I mean? I think there's just seeds that were planted.
Yeah. Yep.
And now they'll have blossomed into these into this worldwide
and
sound.
And I think without geopoliticizing this thing, kind of like mid and southern hemisphere has a particular sound. The north as a particular sound, and how the boats moved in those years, centuries ago, is how the music traveled. And there's a very important thing there, I guess, of, you know, we shouldn't, you know, I guess some of the original musicians, you know, were people who were singing in, you know, in boats trying to keep their hopes alive, not knowing where they were going. And in courts and fields and in all kinds of spaces. So I guess that, you know, we also can't ignore how the sound actually really traveled, and it traveled physically with people. But yeah. Vinny, Chris, Louis spoke about, you know, just kind of like in part the scene. And one of the things here was, I always say the original DJs, was not Liu Punks. It was the guy that owned the spot, like in the 70s and the 80s, and he was selling, you know, beer out of his house, and he had a record collection, and, you know, he was, you know, playing music, and we always said, no, we're going to Vinny's because we know Vinny's style of music, you know, and it was in those disco years. I want you to talk about it a bit, but you had a thing you want to
just talk. Yeah, just on what you're saying, I think it's also a bit of a poetic spiritual submission, because watching how, you know, as the producers and the tastemakers and the people that introduced us to this Chicago New York house in South Africa, and how, you know, when I hear how Black Motion loved, you know, as my peers, they loved Latin, like Bossa Nova. We were always geeking out over like Brazilian rhythms and Latin American sounds. There's something that I think maybe we're looking for each other in the sound. We're looking for each other in the sonics. People are trying to come home. We're trying to find our lost brothers and sisters. And I think house music is such a beautiful story for that yearning.
Yeah.
And I think it's a middle ground. It's actually almost like a spiritual place where we get to meet, because there's the past coming back home, and you guys think you're hearing something new as Americans, but you're hearing something old. It feels like a ricochet room where all of these echoes are happening from the past to the future. And you may think that Amapiano is new, but I was having a conversation with DJ Jazz about how there's so much that, you know, even just in the London scene of like breakbeat, there's so many things that we're talking about how, you know, history is repeating itself in a very nuanced way, but the same way that you're saying that somebody was longing for home singing a slave song is the same way that folk music will then move to jazz, to house, to Chicago, to back to South Africa, then back from South Africa to America. And you think you're playing something new, but you're playing something old that your spirit knows. Yeah. And I think that the spirit and the body remembers stuff. And obviously you want a timeline, and you want to make it neat that when Vinnie DaVinci put a certain song on a compilation because he's got an A&R ear, he's hearing something new, but Vinnie is also hearing something that he knows. So there's that belief that I have about it when these debates come, that we are echoing something that we all know intrinsically.
Do you know that everything you've said should be on a song?
Oh. I was just thinking that. I was gonna sample that.
Okay.
And the sample put in a record.
But it's true though. Something that goes way back, I would say Ola Tunji. Do you know that album? Ola Tunji is an African artist.
Yeah.
Early 70s.
Mm.
When he did Go Ba, you know, that was a huge inspiration for all of us. You know, and then I wanna bring it back to, I mean, you know, when Kenny and I were making records in the 90s, we African rhythms was very important to us, and we put in a lot of our music, as well as hip hop, as well as reggae, jazz, and you know, all that. We put it into the music. We just found whatever we could. I think that's what we did different with house music than a lot of other producers at that time, because we started in 1990. Mm. And we were like, you know, we want to make house music, but we want to bring in all these cultures into house music, Brazilian, jazz, you know, all this stuff, gospel. And that's what we started doing. But, you know, Osunlade, when he came in, I was working on an album, the Masters at Work album, actually. He worked on the Sarah Divine record with me. He played Rhodes on it. And that's when I first met him. And when I started hearing what he was doing, and then a couple of years later, you know, I felt all those inspirations in there. And then somebody who did flip the beat, and, you know, we're talking about rhythm now, you know what I mean? Because you got, you know, house music, Four on the Floor, you know, but now things started getting a little syncopated. We were doing that, like when we did You Can Do It, Baby, and all those records. And, you know, we're a big part of the Broken Beat sound. I don't know if you know, but if you hear the guys from Bugs in the Attic and all, they'll tell you that a record that inspired them was Urban Species by Masters at Work, the Masters at Work dub. When we started flipping the beat, you know, it was because of Kenny, because Kenny's like, I'm tired of making all these house records, Louis. I need to flip the beat. I said, well, flip the beat. And, you know, I played keyboards. Kenny did the beats.
Yeah.
And then I started playing to those beats and locking in with that sound. But then later on, when Bodhisattva came out, when Bodhisattva came out with his beats, and I recognized that from the beginning because I picked up one of his early records, and he was on the label and we did the album and everything, you know, he flipped the beat. He had a swing that was different. His swing was different.
Yeah.
And it made me even play a different way when I would play on his beats. You know what I mean? So, you know, to me, a lot of the rhythms that came from all these guys, you know, I think became the seeds to what's going on today,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then and later on, you know, there's so many others. But you know, I think that I just wanted to give credit to somebody like Bodhi, because to me, when he started making them beats and they were like, you know, making you do this, you know, I was blown away by it. And I said, hey, this is going somewhere else. I like this. I like what's happening.
Yeah, Bodhi represented almost like a futuristic Afro sound.
It was called Ancestral Soul. I remember
that. Ancestral Soul.
Ancestral Soul.
Yeah. Which for me was... Yeah, it was almost like here's what Africa sounds like in the future, but inspired by, you know, a past of sorts. But back to the original DJs, because I think for me it's an important part of history in South Africa specifically.
Yeah,
that's not told.
I mean, I think Chris, me, I don't know about Fresh, but Oskiro, we come from a time when you were talking about a place. We used to call it the spot.
Floyd.
Tavit.
Rospoto.
It's not a club. The guy, his name is Oskido. He owns this joint, sells alcohol.
It's actually his house.
And then he plays
his favorite records.
All his favorite records.
Yeah.
Brian's place.
Yeah, you know. So from a box, from a crate, and then he's got fortunately, some of them, they've got like a 1200, just one. And he plays off the song, finishes another one, just like that, the whole night. And it's a vibe.
Excellent.
It's good. Would you call him a DJ? Or would you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, those were the curators. Who began that culture? Yeah.
He curates a sound, for that place, and even the people who go there, they get used to it. So it's like, yo, you heard that song he played last week, you know?
Yeah.
When then they'll sing to it, like harmonize all over it, like I heard it. It's nice. Yo, play that song again.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of thing. You know, so
and
that was a culture. Yeah. That's how we grew up. That's how we grew up too. Back in the day, like in the '80s. Yeah.
But I think also because a lot of our uncles got paid on Friday, so Friday they'd go buy new records.
Yes.
So the guy that owned the spot would have new records every Friday.
Every Friday.
So it became a whole thing that we're going to Greg's spot
because
we know there'll be a new record.
Yes. And it was very sound specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
right? Because people knew this one plays this blend of soul.
Yeah.
That one likes disco. And it also went with the different styles of people, whether you were punks, Ivies, or Mapanzu.
Sure.
And those different cultures were always associated with the music that came with it.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's fine. I mean, most of those people, now when we're playing dance music, 12-inch vinyls, I first met them at Chris's shop, Maybe Tracks. I'm sure he can tell us more about that. Because he's the guy who introduced vinyls to us here, you know, in the country.
Yeah, with Tim, actually, before House Africa. I was blessed to work in a record store because
you were
since I was young, I wanted to buy vinyls, and my parents were never. You want to buy that stuff, go to work and buy it. That was cool.
Yeah.
So I ended up being the T-boy at a vinyl store.
Nice.
And which was Record World. And eventually I became the salesman. I worked there from age 13 until I finished school. And I worked there now, and we were selling. And just to specialize in imports. So it was jazz, fusion.
Yeah.
You know, your David Sanborn style. And eventually, of course, we got into the disco because the disco 12 inches came out. So
Era.
I went through all the eras from a young age.
Nice.
You know, and so I went through kind of the pre-house scene. When I started playing, then the Chicago house came out, your Chibis or the early Frankie Knuckles. And it was a whole new sound. You know, and from there, I guess I had that passion to, we got to get this music out of people, you know. Mm. And I was blessed to bump into Tim, and we started to import the vinyls.
Nice. Yeah.
And I guess this whole culture just changed, you know, and eventually there was a couple of shops that did it. There was a big shop was Mula, eventually at Small Street, and there was in Watloo. It was Watloo.
Rana
in Watloo. So those were the three top shops in our times. And there was a big competition. So, yes, every Friday or once in a week. And it was massive. I mean, massive in the sense that I'll never forget Frankie Knuckles' tears.
Yeah.
I think we sold in South Africa 11,000 vinyls. And I remember FFR actually saying, you guys sold the most vinyls than any other country at the time. And that was an anthem. I mean, I think we all remember it. And that anthem actually came from all these taverns that were playing one song.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there was a few clubs. There was clubs, but they weren't reaching everybody. The people that were reaching everybody was the taverns.
Yeah.
And literally that was in everybody's, playing at everybody's place. Yeah. And not only that, of course, we had the cassettes as well.
Yeah.
And then they were recorded on cassettes and playing in the taxis
mm-hmm.
at the same time. And that was another big way of how the music was spread. Mm-hmm. Because now you're hearing it in your public transportation system.
Yeah.
This music, this house music, just blaring.
Part of it was his fault, this public transportation system, Ross. He did that project with Star Taxi.
Yeah, because the music wasn't played on radio, right? Because the radio station didn't understand what it was.
Yeah.
But I think for me is when now I started going into a vinyl shop, exposed to dance music, via Mega Tracks. This is now as a club DJ at Razzmatazz. And this is when I started finding out who these guys were. Steve Silk Haley, Masters at Work, Louis Vega, Frankie Knuckles. And I'm saying, okay. Those days, remember, internet wasn't really popular, to go.
In fact, there was no internet.
And then find out, okay, what is it? there is a dub version on the record and all that stuff. Then I started saying, okay. And then later, after doing the research, that's when one found out that, these guys are also DJs. Louis Vega is a DJ. Frankie Knuckles is a DJ. Then I said, okay. Then from there, we started getting these records. And because then they were not played on radio. Then from there, you know, going to record labels to say, hey, guys, there's this big sound happening. And they didn't understand. And that's when I was approached by one record label to come in and say that, okay, we can put these records, right, you know, but we need to do cover versions of them. Then I remember now I used to bootleg most of Lesai. In my first house, I bought them via bootleg because I was selling cassettes, TDKs. I record and sell cassettes. And I got a bond from NetBank. TDKs, hustling. But we started like getting these records, right? Doing compilations, right? And then from there, they were like cover versions. And I remember I had a tape called Mix Masters, but we'll sort of like slow them down. And then from there, this is when everything started. And me and Christos, we started Galawa. Our first thing was BOP, Brothers of Peace. Mm-hmm. It was compilations of the Christos brought in and say, these are the 12 records we are putting. And we started slowing down all those records. And this is when, you know, because now we're commercializing the music, you know, then the tapes were out. And then this is when Kwaito was born. You know, because right now we're doing all these songs instrumental and we started putting, you know, our own vocal chants and all that stuff. And big up for that, Mr. Vega.
Yeah.
But don't put a claim on me.
Question. I mean, because you ran record labels, record shops, there was a time where if you walk into a record shop, if it says Masters at Work, you don't listen to it.
No.
You take the record. Yes. If it says Steve Silk Hurley, or if it says Maurice Joshua, or if it says Joey Negro Remix, there were certain producers and DJs whose records you took without listening because you trusted the sound. Who currently is that person?
Hey.
That you know, oh, okay, it's a Julian Gomez track. I know it's hot.
I think it's a tricky one.
Artist for you right now.
I think it's a tricky one because I think there's just so much music being released.
Yeah,
that there's just too many people to mention. First of all,
is this you avoiding one person?
No, but seriously, like I think it's like it's difficult because like there's like a kid that you would get a demo from that's unheard of, and the record is amazing, and you play it out, and people go crazy. So it's hard to say, like, yeah, there's the obviously people that have built their brands and consistency.
Yeah, who would you say those household names are right now?
In house music or in South African in-house music? I feel like, personally for me, obviously the OGs will always be the OGs. So anything that Louis's releasing or anything, you're always going to just grab. But yeah, I mean, at Jazz, obviously someone that I've always...
No, I'm talking your generation.
My generation.
Yes.
I'm going to say myself because I'm confident in myself. I have to believe in myself. You know, there's a lot of guys in my generation. I think I'm looking at my generation. So Tulo, Kapo,
and the younger guys.
Yeah. So Chronicles also really cool. Dawson's cool. FKA Mesh.
Yeah.
There's so many guys. I'm missing a lot of people.
Yeah.
But and then like the Mapiano guys are doing amazing, bro. Like Kavza. Calvin Momo, you know, I think what the guys have done, there's like a lot of, call it like music wars in our generation. And I don't know if you guys had this in your generation, but it's like the deep guys really don't get along with the Mapiano guys.
And it's been like that for a while.
Is it?
It's been, yeah. So there's always a lot of tribal. Chris would say, are you playing drums? Because I used to love, you know, the tribal, me and Fresh. We try about, because Chris is more soulful, right?
Yeah,
and he says, no, the drum guys.
I used to have Kwaito guys that had beef with me because I released a house project.
Yeah.
But they couldn't hate me because I was playing the music on the radio. So,
and then you were.
No, there was beef. There was a lot of beef, but maybe friendly beef eventually because I think everybody was a family.
Yeah.
I think no matter what, at the end of the day, when things got shaky, everybody stood together. The movement moved together.
Mm.
I think, I don't know, maybe it was just growing because the market was growing and we didn't understand in a certain sense. I mean, we never had genres when we grew up. So it was house music.
Yeah.
You know, everything was house. So it's just, I guess you play different versions of house, you know what I mean? I mean, even in a set, even today, I've never been able to play an hour deep set. Maybe for a specific gig, yes, but I don't like it because you want to jump from one thing to another because
you want a bit of a journey.
you're on a journey, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, what the genre is, you just play it. And people always say, I get angry when people say Deep House DJ, because I'm a Deep House DJ. I'm not.
Yeah.
You play jazz, you play soul,
it's
you
Vinny's
play
fault.
Deep House, you play.
Because it's Vinny. What would you say the state, though, of, because, you know, things evolve, right? So we've moved from a particular point where there was always music that is dominating at a particular point, right? You know, the 80s was kind of like a disco soul era, right? That's what ruled, right? Jazz was always kind of the fringe. And then the disco obviously evolved into house music, which evolved into Kwaito. And then there was this emergence of hip hop, right, in the SA scene. And then there was this battle between Kwaito and hip hop, you know, kind of happening. I remember Makhim vividly saying, "Asimus dates mo," you know. And then it kind of moved back into house. Then there was instrumental house. Then there was vocal house. Then there was, you know, and now we sit in the piano, right, which, you know, I guess is another form of domination, is another period of a particular sound. Just purely state of music and all the stuff that we love and that we listen to, how would you describe what today looks like? Saki?
Yo. Goodness. Well, I can tell you what today feels like.
Yes.
One of the things that I like the most about Amapiano, and I'm speaking to you guys as a person who doesn't really have an affiliation to a genre, because I think it's given me a chord and a half and I'm ready to write a song. And I can dissolve in a lot of things because I'm moved very quickly. But one of the things that I love about Amapiano, especially from a storytelling angle, leave the sonics and the politics of the sonics and how they come to be now. I think I agree with this journey that you're painting, sonically, how we get here. But there's an aspirational and a deep yearning to connect. So a lot of the lyrics, the kids are saying what they want to do. They want to buy their mother's houses. They want cars. They want, and they're telling us, and they're manifesting. And they, so I there's something about that audacity for a better life that I think is present in the music. There's a hopefulness to it. And there's obviously, like, South Africans want to have a good time. So there's also that, like, we're coming back at 6. You know, we're out all night. We're coming back at 6. And that's also, you know, I think, almost a protest as well, where there's joy in the music when sometimes your surroundings don't really give you anything to be joyful about.
Yep.
And so I respect it as a medium to lift, like, you know, the spirit of a black child up.
Yeah.
And so I respect what the movement is doing globally, but I also don't like how it's being mined globally by the industry side, where people will come and underpay producers and come and take a sound, mine it, repackage it, and make it as if it's something that they came up with somewhere else. So I don't know. There's an ambivalence about the state of music. I like what the South Africans want to say from their hearts, but I don't think that we have the infrastructure to be respected and to really take the sound globally in a way that benefits the real makers of it. Yeah.
I feel the same, eh? Like, thinking, how do you hate on a human being that's building their life around music and taking care of their family and just uplifting themselves and their families and their communities and things? So I obviously come from I've also been boxed in, like, my whole career I've been boxed into, like, a deep house DJ because of Vinny as well, you know, because of all the, like, it's the inspiration I took from him. But, like, on a serious note, like, yeah, I think it's incredible. Every time I see you guys doing well and going international, and even if you just talk about people like Coffee and Shimza, and what they've done for South African music, and what Coffee's opened so many doors for so many people, right? I think, like, we obviously know that there's beef and we know that the scene is got very strong opinions.
Yeah.
But I think there's a core, like Chris said, there's a core that we all believe in what we're doing. And yeah, that we all support each other. So I think we're in a great space. I think, like, yeah, the economy, if we had a better economy, I think it would change the game for not just music, but I think the economy changes everything with the music industry, like what people can spend at the door, et cetera. You know?
Just a question, Louis, is it like that? I'm sure you can understand what they're talking about. I mean, you come from an era where I mean, there's so many legendary guys who own their house in. How is the beef like?
Well, first of all, when I started, I was a young kid, teenager, but a lot of the legends, I was in New York, so I was in the middle of it all when they were all making music in the studios. And as I started meeting people, they were hearing of this young kid in the Bronx who was drawing a lot of people, you know, packing places and, you know, playing music well and stuff. So they invited me to the studio. So I was embraced by a lot of the legends in New York that you would know today that made so much music. They were really, you know, people like Arthur Baker, Jelly Bean, Benitez, the Latin Rascals, Bruce Forrest, Tony Humphries. These are all like, you know, my mentors and my people who have, you know, at one time or another, you know, invited me to come in the studio, said, you want to sit in the back, just absorb, ask any questions. I would take advantage of all that. I would be in those studios. You know, so that's how I kind of learned to do what I did. And as I started working at clubs.
My question, what I want.
Well, I'm going to the beef now. I'm getting to the beef. There was no beef. But at that time, when I was this young kid coming up, yeah, the older guys that were playing, they were calling me the bubblegum DJ. You know, I was like getting teased all over the place because I was this, you know, teenager coming up and killing it. And then when I went from the Bronx to the city, then I went into that territory. So I went into clubs that held 3,000 people playing every Friday and Saturday night. We're talking 85 to 90, you know, 86 to 90. So, yeah, so there was that kind of beef, but not really beef. It wasn't like hip hop beef, no fights or nothing. It was just like, I guess you would call it a friendly banter. I mean, I don't know. It was just, you know, people would talk in the record stores. That's where they were talking.
Yeah.
Because that was the place where all the DJs met. Yeah. It was the record store. They were, oh, you heard about Luya? He plays that bubblegum. Yeah, I got my phone, you know? And I was doing this music called, you know, Latin hip hop freestyle. I was part of a whole other movement in 1985. And I made about 80 to 100 of those records from 86 to 89, you know? And I was part of this movement, huge records in that scene. So I was making noise. But in the record stores, yeah, that's what you heard all the stuff. They're like, yo, they was talking about you. This, you know, it would get like that.
I was like, actually going to ask you about the role of freestyle in the evolution of house music, because freestyle was a massive sound, especially in the Latin neighborhoods in the US, in Miami. That's the radio stations that only play freestyle music. Do you think it gets the credit it deserves, though? I mean, you did a song, I'm a Ride on the Rhythm, with Mark Anthony. He was a massive freestyle artist before you did the record with him.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, that was house music.
I mean, Lisa is freestyle.
Yes.
But a lot of us dance to Lisa's music thinking it's house music, but it's actually freestyle.
No, it's freestyle. It's Latin hip hop and freestyle. Latin hip hop was later. Freestyle was like Shannon.
Yes.
Like that whole
Let style. The music play was freestyle, yes.
John Roby and Arthur Baker, their sound. Yes. Was the guys that I told you, like Arthur Baker invited me to the studio, he was making that sound.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that was the inspiration for Latin hip hop. We love those records, and we love the new wave music from England.
Yeah.
Like those songs were Depeche Mode, like groups like that were inspiring us to make the music and get our vocalists. But all we had was, you know, the Latin girls that could, you know, that wanted to sing. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I mean, I have to be honest, like 80% of them couldn't, you know, carry a tune.
Yeah.
But there was this small percentage of them that could, you know. You know, you had singers like Lisa, India.
Jamaica.
You had, you know, that's house music.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the freestyle music, you know, there was Mark Anthony. Yeah. There was only a few artists that, you know, that really, like, could take it to that next level.
Yeah.
As I made those records and this whole movement was happening, that's when I had, you know, 3,000-4,000 kids every Friday and Saturday in New York City. Big sound systems. I was playing on Richard Long, you know, on the proper sound systems, hearing this music in that environment. It was definitely a scene. It was incredible. But that's when hip hop and Latin freestyle, because I used to play hip hop too. I played hip hop, reggae, Latin hip hop, disco, all those musics in one night. That's how I learned to flow the way I do when I DJ. And that's why I can flow through genres when I DJ. It's from growing up in New York and playing that way.
That's why you can play a wedding if you.
And that's why when I came here and I was playing like that, going from those break beats to house beats to this and that, but smooth like that. That's how I learned how to do that. And I learned that from watching DJs like Tony Humphries, Larry Levan, Bruce Forrest, like all those guys. You know, but you know, that movement was very strong. It got to radio. I mean, I sold more records in that world, you know, from 500,000 to a million. I mean, you know, those kind of platinum records, everything. It was that level of music, but it only got but so far, the music. You know, the Cover Girls, I was on, you know, Information Society, yeah. You know, and I was even doing pop music, like Debbie Gibson. She was like a Britney Spears. Yeah. So what happened was in the late 80s, when I wanted to make more house music, it was Todd Terry, who used to come to my clubs, and he made a lot of freestyle music too.
Yeah.
He was in the beginning of it, you know. So he used to bring me these tapes, and I was like, yo, my man, I'm not playing a tape. I don't play tapes. You got to give me a reel-to-reel. Because I had a reel-to-reel with a Fish Control, 3 turntables, Yuri mixer. You know, I had my a crossover. So I used to play unreleased music on a reel-to-reel with a Pitch Control.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, well, you've seen Kerry Chandler probably do it right now, but there was a technique one. And then, you know, you cue it, you know, you and you just let it go and you mix with the Pitch Control. So, I was doing 3 turntables and that. And Todd Terry brought me his records. Next thing you know, I'm playing Todd Terry's records 9 months before they came out. Yeah. So I became the Pied Piper to these kids. And we were breaking music. That's when you were breaking records. Yeah. You know, that's when a few months later, then you would hear it all over the city, you know, in the 5 boroughs and then spreading out. You know, so that music, you were very instrumental.
You're the Ganyani of our era. So Ganyani did exactly what you did with reels, except he used tapes. And he had a sound system, like when you book him, he comes with like 6 tape decks. And he will mix on cassettes.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Right across, which is something that's less spoken of, actually.
Can I just add to what Louis was saying? Mm. You know what I appreciate about the scene you built as a teenager? When we met you in Miami back, 22 years ago, 21 years ago, a lot of those kids, now adults, still follow you.
Yeah.
It's the wildest shit.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to, you know, to know that at this age, and, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing because I love doing it. You know, I have a passion for it. I love making music. I've become a seasoned producer now, obviously a seasoned DJ, and I do what I do. But it's, you know, when you find somebody who's saying, you know, Louis, I've been with you for 40 years.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Mm. That's incredible. So find people around the world that have been with you for 25 years, 30 years. And you know, it's really beautiful. And that's the kind of things that you know, that keep me going. But, you know, back in the freestyle, it was with Todd Terry who got me to do more house music. If you listen to Todd Terry's early records, if you see them, it says mixed by Little Louis Vega.
Yes.
It's because he was doing so many records. He's like, Louis, I like the way you mix them freestyle records. Why don't you mix these house records? Yeah. So I started doing them in D&D Studios. And, you know, the same time I'm there, premieres in there. I mean, you know, it was an incredible scene with hip hop and house and freestyle all together, you know. And then from making house music, that's when I met Kenny Dope. And when I met Kenny Dope, I was offered an album deal on Atlantic Records. And what did I do? I said, I need singers. What am I going to do? I reached out to the 2 best singers in the freestyle scene, which was Mark Anthony and India.
Yes.
And India wrote the song. She sang the backgrounds and Mark Anthony was the lead. And all we were trying to do was mimic my uncle, who was a famous salsa singer, and the producer, Willie Colon, who were a team, incredible team in salsa music on Fania Records. We were just trying to mimic them. Let's be that of dance music. And that's what we did. And that was the beginning.
We used to butcher one of your song with Mark Anthony, Ride on the Rhythm.
Right on the rhythm.
We used to sing it as, Clean Caro Jele Di Papa. Clean Caro Jele Di Papa. Avara, avara.
Wow. That was Mark Anthony. He came up.
Speaking of being a seasoned producer, we were speaking behind your back with Msaki. And she spoke about how she appreciates that you're as seasoned as you are because you were different to most people. You care to expand on that? Sorry to snitch
well,
on.
Well, I mean, I did watch you. I watched you in LA, and I saw the demographic. And I think it's something about your. This I don't know. The you know, especially when you guys are talking about beef and talking about all of that stuff. I think there's something about the way that you move that's just very generous in spirit, and maybe even the generations can feel it. And I'm sure you've made space like the same way that you just really welcomed me, warmly. I saw the people that were at your show. You could see the ones that have been following you for 50 years, 40 years, and you saw the ones that are new, that are discovering you in different ways. And I don't know if it's just about the DJing skill and it's about the production skill. I think it's also an atmosphere that you've maybe cultivated. over time that I wish I could also see more of in younger producers. I mean, I think sometimes here, I feel like, you know, not here, but I feel like sometimes if somebody's on a throne and they won't find a way to let the next person have space to express themselves, that throne is going to get taken down. And some of these youngsters are gunning for some of the guys here that have got the king, the
crown.
And the way that you guys move and the way that you are, you know, have remained friends and the way that you respect each other is commendable. Yeah, and I think maybe that's more, you know, you can, music is a gift, but I think that's also a choice that you've made. I don't know if maybe even they know you, but I think it's something that I really respect about you and I want to emulate it one day. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I also feel like if you look at it from our perspective, our generation, if it wasn't like I can, every single person from Chris, Vinny, Fresh, Greg, Oscar, like you think about how many lives you've changed and you maybe don't realize it, even Louis, like I think it's an energy thing. So like when you open your heart and your mind and your soul to someone and you give them that opportunity to say like, because I think for us, like we just like sitting here with like, we like looking at the idols that we grew up on. We're just like, I mean, Chris, Vinny, Greg, everyone, like we just like, you urban legends to us. Like, you know, we just like, these are like, I had like posters of Crystal CZ's and like your albums and stuff. So it's like, it's just a really cool thing to know that there's people out there that won't close the door on you. And even like, if you look at someone like Oscar as well, like, now you look at like he's kind of passed it down to Coffee. Now Coffee's like opening the door and Shims is opening the doors to so many people. So I think it's an energy thing, like how you treat people and how you, like it's also, it's beyond your music, I think.
And yeah, your like, personality. Yeah. I mean, you know, you just the way you are and the way you connect. You know what I mean? When I play music, that happens.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a time. You know what I mean? And I think it really came through. Like when I was at the Sound Factory Bar in the 90s, when I was doing a party with Barbara Tucker and Don Welch, we did it for 5.5 years. And we really held down house music along with Timmy Regisford at the Shelter too in New York, like powerful, like breaking music. All those singers that you all played over the years, Michael Wofford, Barbara Tucker, like, I mean, you name it. And all the producers, they were hanging out there. So at that time, I guess I had all my peers there, and most importantly, the dancers. We had the best dancers in New York City at that time, underground dance culture. We're talking about the dancers, you know, but imagine having 800 of them every Wednesday, you know, so it was just a crazy scene. And for me, I think that's what helped bring out of me when I play music. It was just connecting with them and just like closing your eyes and just, you know, and that just happened, you know, and I think that's something that takes time. You know, I mean, it's different now these days because, you know, okay, there's DJs dancing and there's more to it. You know, it's a whole different thing now. You know what I mean? It's like, the phones, they're dancing. It's a whole different, but dance. I'm saying.
Chris now is a dancer.
Because, yeah.
And no longer touch.
You know, yeah. You know what I mean? But the DJing thing, it's to me, that comes out, you know, as you play and as you connect, you know, and the energy. You're right about that energy.
And I want to say something, Louis. I think, We, you know, the five of us here, we decided to go to Miami. You know, we wanted to discover what was happening. And when we got there, we didn't have money and we booked one room. And we all slept in one room. And I remember Christos was snoring and I couldn't, you know. So we were there for 5 days, but trying to discover. And when we came back here, this is when we started our outfit DJU, where we thought, you know, let's start teaching, you know, the young ones about the music industry. I think when you find out, I mean, this is when you've met a lot of guys who've like emerged, you know, from the South African dance music scene. It was because we decided that we want to go in and teach the next generation. That's why if you can see right now, the best programmers, guys who are making music, they're about maybe 16, 17 years old, the best mapiano producers. Mm. So then it has evolved to that. But coming into that, I remember the third year when we went there, I got there and then we found, we found you, invited us to a party and then you were playing with Ray Ayres. Mm. Remember that part, you were playing with Ray Ayres, the jazz musician. Wow. Yeah. You know, I was really like, that touched me. And when I came back, I went to my partner, Bruce, BOP. I said that we have to change the game because we're programming Kwaito. It was about 110 110 beats per minute, and we up the tempo, you know, to 120. And this is when I started, like, you know, speaking to all the jazz musicians, because we were trying to do what we're doing. And the jazz musician didn't want to work with us because they felt we were quieter guys. We didn't know what we're doing and all that. But the person who came to the studio agreed was Yuma Segela. He came to the studio at Kalawa. And then from there, this is when we did the BOP, the Zabalaza project. And I remember playing with him there. You know, he was playing his trumpet and all that stuff. All he wanted was his session money. But we said, no, you know what, we play these things. So let's talk publishing. He didn't know what publishing, what I took. I just made my money. Understand? And we paid it. But later we had to explain to him what we meant. And that thing opened a lot of doors for him to understand that all these records which he was playing, he didn't know that he was being owed money as a composer. But fast forward, that record, boom. You know, I remember when we finished doing it, the BOP, the Zabalaza project, there were about 10 tracks. We sent it to you. And then you came in, and I remember just sitting one day at my house, and then I just saw an email popping up from Masters at Works saying that, no, we want to sign this record.
Wow.
And for me, that was the evolution, because this is when, you know, you guys, you took, you know, that record, and then you remixed it, and later you've done a lot of stuff. Imafizolo came in, then Black Coffee came in with the track you did with Boosie, and the whole of this thing exploded. I just want to applaud you on that, man. That was...
Thank you, man. Well, I have to say, when I first came here, I was blown away by the sound, you know, and the way everybody felt it. And that you guys were playing everything pitched down. The only DJ that used to play house records pitched down was Tony Humphries. Yeah, okay. He used to play them at 116, though, around there. And they were like 120, 122, 123.
This guy's fault.
You know? So, yeah. So then when I heard this music from here, I said, damn, this music is dope. It's like, it's in a different language. It's in their language. But the music sounds like Mr. Fingers, the chords, the bass lines. It sounds so cool. You know what I mean? And I loved it. And you know, and when we came here and we played at the YFM party, yeah, we went. Was that your place we went to when we went with everybody? Right?
Yeah.
We all hung out there. We were just talking.
Yeah.
You know, and there was like a reggae guy. I can't remember his name. He was a reggae artist. He was hanging out. He was an old school one.
Was it Appleseed?
Yeah.
He was old school. He was older. And I was talking to him for a while. I was talking to Pepsi. I mean, everybody, you know, the whole crew, Monday, you know, you guys. And we were just talking music. And I just went back so inspired. And I said, you know what, this, you know, we got to do something with this. And I kept asking you for stuff. You know, like, and then I told you guys about Miami. I said, you guys got to come to Miami.
Yeah.
You need to come to Miami. There was a winter music conference that happens every year, and we were a part of it. We always used to do Masters at Work parties since 96 or 7.
Yeah.
When we did New York and Soul. Yeah, 96, because we presented it there with Roy Ayers. But we brought him again in 2000. Mm-hmm. And then... We signed BOP, you know, your project, and then we signed Mafikizolo, Loot, right? Mm. And I said, you got to come to the 10-year anniversary.
Yes.
I said, but I want you guys to I want people to hear you guys. You guys are amazing, you know, the way you guys played music. It was beautiful, you know, the sounds. So we had this other room. It was a place called Opium Garden, an open-air club, and it was beautiful. It fits about 2,000 people. It's in Miami, and we were doing our 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
So over our 10-year anniversary, this magazine came to us and threw us all this money, because my friend came to me, who's a promoter, Carmel, who owned the Vagabond later on, and I used to do backdoor Bambi parties with him in Miami. Mm. He said, Louis, you know, they want to give you this money to do a party. And I said, well, we're doing our 10-year anniversary. We spent every cent of that money. I'm not even going to say. We're talking six figures. And Kenny and I went all out. I mean, we had James Ingram there, Roy Ayers, Jody Wildley. I mean, all these people. And I said, you guys got to come out. We need you to play in that room there. And I remember we had that chocolate thing, right? Like a fountain with chocolate. We had fireworks. We had Brazilian dances. I mean, Kenny and I went off on that party. You know, it was crazy. And you guys came. And Greg was telling me, because, you know, obviously we were in the main room, and we had like Jazzy Jeff, Masters at Work. I mean, goodness, that lineup was crazy.
Yeah,
but all you guys were upstairs.
Yeah.
So what happens is everybody had to flow through the rooms. And as people were flowing through the rooms, I had people coming to me going, yo, the African dudes upstairs, the African dudes. They just kept saying, they're playing some dope music. We love them. I said, well, that's why they're here. That's why they're here. So it worked. Everybody was flowing. And next thing you know, you had all the people up there, and they were just loving your music. Yeah. And to me, that was just a great moment. You know,
let me tell you what happened that day, right? So now I think it was our third year or so coming to Miami. But what happened is that we used to buy a lot of vinyls, right? So then from there, when we got there, because when we landed in Miami, we always wanted to go to the record stores, right? So we went fresh and everything, you know, to look for new records, because you had given us that room. You know, we are happy to say that we want to rock. So all of us, boom. And I mean, you really made us to be VIPs, because we remember when we were going in, we went in as VIPs. And we could see guys who were signing, licensing their records. And they were standing in queues, guys like DJ Gregory and all that. You know, someone was showing us. You know, they were in a queue. Yeah. And we were taken on the VIP.
It was more in the morning.
It was everybody. Hey. But when we got there, what's funny is that, if you remember, we found that the scene had changed. You guys were now on CDs. And all of us, when we left this country, all the guys who were transforming to CDs, we didn't look at them as DJs. Christos will come in and say, ah, these are pop DJs or whatever. You know, you can't play on CDs. So we are real. So we come in there with our crates and all that. And we found you were now playing on CDJs. You know, it's funny. But later, because at least we had recorded 10 tables, because we insisted on SL 1200s and we registered. But when we landed here, all of us, we transformed all our music into CDs, tech. We, you know, now you could see Christos with a pouch, fresh with the pouch. You know, there were those big.
I had to slap a 600.
Remember that morning? You know, so, you know, the tech changed.
Yeah.
And I don't know that right now, the DJ scene, a lot of, from vinyl to CD, and now it's going into somewhere else. Mm. I mean, how has that transformed?
Going to the club.
And of you guys, hey, Chris. Because Chris hated CDs, eh? But later, it's just like when we told him about social media.
He wanted flyers.
He wanted flyers. No.
I still do them.
Yeah.
You know, that was the transition. You know, exactly at that time, that's when we went from vinyl to CDs. Yeah. We had already been changing, you know. But I want to bring up Miami, because after that, I had signed the BOP Records and the Mafiki Zolo record. Then you brought me a Huma Sequila record.
Yes.
And we know Huma Sequila from jazz and all that. But also, let's give credit to Huma Sequila for Don't Go Lose a Baby, which is early house to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't Go Lose a Baby was a huge record at the Paradise Garage. I was there seeing Larry Levan play on this huge sound system, and it tore the place in half. You know what I mean? So, you know, shout outs to Huma Sequila, who was always experimental.
Yeah.
He reminds me, he's like your, like the way Tito Puente is to me.
Yeah.
Is Huma Sequila is to me for South Africa.
Like Miles Davis.
You know what I'm saying? And it's crazy, because in the future, you brought him to Miami. Remember with the Zulu dance and the whole thing?
Actually,
that was amazing.
Remember that story when we sent this was those email days. So Louise on my case is like, yo, you have to send you a lineup, you know, for the show. And you were launching the first Elements of Life album. And we had this very cool Portuguese restaurant with a dance floor at the top and a restaurant at the bottom. So I sent the lineup and I get a phone call like at the crack of dawn. It's like, yo, your lineup says you have Huma Sequila. I'm like, yeah. She said, we can't publish that. I'm like, what do you mean? He says, there's no way you've got Huma Sequila.
Yeah.
And I think all of us understood how big Brahe was at this country, but we didn't have an appreciation of his global status. Mm. And Louis is like, there is no way you guys have Brahe. Brahe is a big star. You guys, I love you, but no, you don't.
Yeah.
I'm like, so anyway, we get to Miami and then give Louis a call. I'm like, yo, come, let's meet at the hotel. He's like, damn, you it's like, you got Hugh? Like, immediately, flyers are printed, everything is big. It was incredible. But you're right. The showstopper that day was Ashelim Klopp. Because we had to smuggle his gear through customs because he had all his, like, you know, his traditional vibe, right? Dressed up in his traditional vibe, we had scored this like 45-minute piece with Oskido on the decks and Tandiswa coming through, Mandla Spekir coming through, and, you know, just a couple of people going through and singing. Brahu did a thing. It was a whole kind of medley. And then right at the end was Ashedim Club, and he did Nunuz. And then when he did his last act of jumping and, like, dropping,
yeah,
and we were all now at the bar, and people were coming to me and Oskido, we tried to get a drink. It's like, yo, Oskido, I want the Zulu man on my Rexico. I want the Zulu man on my next record, man. Where's the Zulu man? But, man, it was incredible. It was funny. But one of the other really important moments, mm-hmm, I think, for all of us, when you talk about Mafikizolo, and now that there's a remix now, I got a little emo, as my children would say, when you did the remix now. And we went, again, Miami. We just do a podcast on Miami, actually. Again, we're in Miami. We go to a party you were playing, and it was hosted by Stuff Magazine. And this is March.
Was it the Penthouse?
Right, the Penthouse party. So now this is in March. 4 months, bro. How many months to October, if you count backwards, however many months there was. So Louis in South Africa, October, right? We do the YFM birthday party. We do a couple of other parties. We do Canalita and all those places. And then he picks up Mafikizolo Lute, right? Takes the vinyl from Mosquito. He had dates, Paris, London, Japan, and a couple of US dates. So everywhere he's going, he's playing Lute. We arrive in Miami in March. We sneak into this party because we only had two tags, but we're there with Bruce speaking. The guys are like, oh, yeah, how is she? Baba, we're going, you know? So, like, anyway. So we all go, and Louis playing. No idea that we're in the room. People came and got us. Bruce and Spianko follow the smell of the weed. Now they're in the balcony there with some guys I don't know. Now they hang with these guys, having all these conversations. Mauta is scanning the room. Mosquito and I are standing in the corner. We're looking at what's going on. And then you drop Lute in the set. And everybody lose their mind. But this is like 250 people, 50 industry people strong. The 200 is kind of like global, you know, people that follow the movement. You know, when you have, because I'm into this day, man, I'll tell the story. Mm. Everybody singing a song and nobody knows what the lyrics say, right? They was like, oh, where, whoa. I wanted to stand on top of a table and just say, well, switch off the music. Let me tell you about this song. That guy, that guy, that guy. That's our tune. Man. But at that moment for me, I think that's when I knew that we had reached the world with our sound. And again, it was with you behind the decks. And I think these moments for me are very important for us to talk about, right? And I think for people to know, just from a culture point of view, from the days of, you know, Chris introducing vinyl, right, to you dropping Lute on that particular day, to, you know, hearing Saki go, please don't. I mean, come on. All of that for me is kind of like these very key moments. And I think for me, that was one of those key moments.
I think I just want to mention one as well. Yeah. Very, maybe it wasn't, maybe everybody didn't notice it in the same way that I did, because I was working with Coffee at the time, and Superman had finished, yeah, or the album had been done. And Coffee took Coffee to Miami, part, yep, of everybody. And he gave us opportunity at the South African party.
Yep.
And when the song played, and Louis was actually there, he was there on the floor, and he actually clapped after it. I mean, just that whole emotion. Yeah. I don't know how to explain it. And just what the song did to people.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how Coffee felt about it, but I guess it was a jazzy. Not that there was anything wrong with it, but, you know, it was something completely different.
Yeah.
And that song actually blew everybody's mind and actually started blowing up, and Coffee started blowing up. Just with his whole DJing style. And I saw it unfold.
Yeah.
And just through the doors that are open. But I saw it unfold. But I was thinking it's going to explode, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know if everybody kind of noticed it. Because, yes, Louis did. You know, you felt it.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying the way it unfolded and those opportunities, I mean, just being there and just, and, you know, I think it was life-changing. I think for Coffee, I think he would have to tell it himself.
Yeah.
But for me, just watching it, you know. And the nice thing is, you know, well, so we had been in the industry for so long. And, you know, taking somebody like Coffee, just go there and just destroying Miami. Because Coffee pretty much just destroyed Miami. Because I did try to take him as at as many events as I could. I mean, even at the bars, in the streets, whatever, you know. And Coffee just wanted to play. And everywhere he went, he just blew people away, you know.
Killed it.
And Superman just blew people away. And after that, became an anthem. Actually, it became a anthem outside of the country before it became an anthem.
Yes, it did,
We are running out of time. I think we're going to need to wrap it up. Apparently, they need the room soon. So I don't know how you guys want to wrap it up. One more question.
With a prayer.
Or just wrap it up.
No, your last I'll start. Yeah, man, I think like today's been really cool. You know, from my perspective, just I'm really appreciative, very grateful. That like I can just sit here and like hear all these stories and just hope to like do the amazing work that you guys have done and you've instilled in me, and I just hope I can kind of pass it down, because thank you so much for everything you guys have done and continue to do through music and just with your spirit. So man,
but do you use the sync button?
I don't use the sync.
But in the bigger scheme of things, does it really matter, the sync button? In the bigger scheme of things,
I think so, man.
No,
like why is there so much politics around it? Is what I don't understand.
I don't get it.
Which one is the thing?
Because if you can,
sync, like, doesn't even know what a sync button is.
I always say, if we're gonna, you know, give DJs uphill about the sync button, then we might as well then not use the digital display either, because it tells you the BPM.
Yeah,
so it doesn't really matter whether you use a sync button or not. And why does it bother you if I mix out my ass?
True.
You know, am I moving a crowd? Mm-hmm. You know, sorry. Yeah. You were saying.
On to Oscar, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, I mean, thanks for this opportunity. And thanks, Fresh, for making... I mean, we haven't been together, you know, like this for a long time. And thanks, Louis, for, you know, making this as an initiative. Fresh told me that... You say that, no, I don't want an interview. Let's just have a conversation. Saki, my love, thank you very much. You've always, you know, been an inspiration to a lot of people out there, you know, a lot of upcoming musicians. And I know your writing skills, the workshops which you are doing, you're doing a lot in the industry, and we really appreciate it. And Vinny Da Vinci, for always being there, the deep star, you know, your deep house thing has really taken off. As you know, that you are the first guy who really pushed what my piano is. And like what Fresh was saying, that in terms of NR, a lot of people underrate you. These are the guys who introduced Kabza the Smalls when they were underground and all that stuff. Mm. And big up for that, because a lot of people don't know that. Christos, thank you very much for introducing us to this sound finals and always being there, inspiring us, teaching us. I remember I didn't even know what a 12 SL 1200 is. I will come to the shop and hustle you guys. And I mean, we've done a lot of amazing things. I mean, I remember even what Coffee is today, teaching a lot of guys the technicality of mixing. I mean, you've done a lot. Maluka, for always taking care of us on the brand we have and telling us who we are messing up, you know, with our name, saying that, hey, no, Skido, you have to focus on this, I believe, thing. And I believe, and check what it is right now. Granas, thank you very much, man. We must do a record together.
For sure. I want to remix Zavala.
No, it's fine. I'll give it to you. Yeah. I give you.
I'm putting Oscar on the spot. Sorry, but
No, it's fine. I'll give you the vocals.
There we go.
Yeah, I did, because I'm doing that. I've taken most of my work, which we did 10 years ago, and then we've just been remixing it. I gave it to Louis for people to understand where this Afro house comes from, Tribal House. And so thank you very much, guys. And let's just move this together, this movement, and show people who we are. And without you, I mean, me as Oskido, I won't be there. Thalazim Kuza, I know Louis, I've messed up. And these are the guys who put me together. They've cleaned me properly. And thank you guys for polishing me.
I'm not gonna lie. I miss the old Oskido. You know, I miss the Oskido where even Oskido didn't know what's happening next, but it's gonna happen.
When I'm sick, they want me to be these guys. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's a lot to say, but. The one thing I want to commend everyone around the table for is there's someone out there who links their success directly to you. And if you've done that for one person, you've lived your life, right? And I know that you guys have done it for a lot of people. The second thing is that, this is only the beginning, you know. If you guys thought that you were done and you're about to hang your gloves, forget it, right? There's still, you know, a long and beautiful journey that all of us are going to walk and just, you know, carry on imparting that spirit, you know, that we've earned in the music space and all the inspiration that we've had. And lastly, just to say that, you know, with Msaki and Julian around here, and by the way, we didn't have enough chairs and enough cameras. There were many other people that we wanted to have at this session. You know, it's just the time was quite short to be able to get everybody. And I think it's important to say that, you know, there's a big, beautiful story about Zinhle and Anani, you know, in Miami. There's a beautiful recording video footage of them sitting by the pool and having this conversation about, you know, what they are wanting to do in the game and what they want to change and what they want to shift. And, you know, sitting here today, and I remember that was in 2010, and sitting here today and thinking about the work that they've put in and, you know, how they've shifted culture is also something that, you know, is incredible. And it's, you know, these are future things that we'll talk about. But I think, yeah, thank you, everybody, for doing what you do. And bless you all.
Msaki?
Can I say something short? I just want to say...
Short.
I'm having...
Everyone, surreal, short, guys. Keep it short.
It's a bit of a surreal moment. Being around all of you with, you know, how technology has happened to you, my respect for you as artists, record owners, started record labels that have shifted the culture, compilers, producers, the way you've shifted through all of these things, especially the South African... gang here, Louis, we wouldn't know you if it wasn't for them, but I also think that you've carried a lot of them to the world. I just wanted to thank you also just for the integrity. I think there's a lot to look up to, you know, in the way that you've moved in your careers, and as a person who has fallen in love with music but not necessarily with the industry, it's really lovely to look at people that have put longevity and I think the soul of a song at the center. And so I just wanted to thank you as an artist who resonates with that for all the music and for this moment that I'm not going to forget. It's a bit crazy to look at my high school CD collection in real form.
Louis?
Oh, my God. Let me not get emotional, but, you know, I just want to say thank you. You know, our friendship over 26 years together. You know, it's been beautiful and it's so great how we come back together, or we don't even see each other maybe for a year or something, and I'll reach out to Fresh out of nowhere, or Greg, or Oskido, or you, you know what I mean? And it's just beautiful to know that you guys have been such a big part of history. I learned so much today hearing where it came from, so it didn't come out of nowhere. It's beautiful that it came from way back to what you were saying and what you were saying and what you were saying, you know. So, you know, just to learn your history of dance music, you know, I've really learned a lot. It was beautiful. And to, you know, to my newcomers here, for me, because we only been connecting, you know, Msaki and Julian, you know, I respect what they do. You know, they are true artists and I appreciate them.
And that was the reason why I mentioned I wanted, would like them to come. You know, it's just, I'm a very of the moment person.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If I want to work on something, it's going to happen next week. It'll happen, you know, or if I meet somebody and it feels good, and that's the main thing. And I felt really good with both of them. And that's why, you know, we've connected and it's beautiful, you know, and I respect them very much. So, you know, I want to thank everybody up here. It's been amazing. And, you know, shout out to the new generation. I mean, yesterday I played a gig and I couldn't believe out of nowhere. They weren't even on the bill. And I walk into the booth and Atmos Black is playing. And, you know, he's one of my favorites who's doing new music out there that I'm really enjoying and playing around the world. You know, and then Kabza comes after me. I'm like, oh, my God, what is going on? Yeah. Julian's there. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, just this, the whole family. Zinlay was in the house. I mean, you know, it was beautiful to see that unity and that connection. And that's what I always try to bring wherever I play around the world. And I'm so happy that everybody came together like that here last night. That made me feel really good and almost like a resurgence or like a feeling of there's so much more to do with all of us. You know what I mean? And in creativity, everything, the new generation, all that, you know. So shout outs to them. And back at home with Anani and Nulu and Kenny Dope and the whole family, you know, Joe Clozel, Ron Trent. I mean, you know, I could go on and on. Osunda Day, who carry on this music and still make it after all these years. We're talking 30 years of these people making music. Anani lasts 15 years, you know what I mean? You know, with Nulu and everything. So, you know, it's, to me, just look at it that we are always here for you guys and just know that. And we're here to carry on the spirit and do what we do. But, you know, always know that now, you know, we're only a WhatsApp away, you know, for all of yous, you know, so just know that, you know, very accessible and for whatever you need. You know, I'm here.
Vice versa, bro.
Thank you.
No, thank you
for doing.
Thank you very much, Chris.
I think Louis, thank you for the inspiration. I mean, you've opened so many doors. I mean, I can't even mention them. You know, I think just so many and so many so casually. You know, it was just done.
Yeah.
I think besides the inspiration and the amazing music, I mean, I've never seen a producer or even a duo that can just do it in so many generations. I mean, it's unthinkable. I mean, when we look at our pop artists, a lot of them can't keep up with that. But you guys have kept up with it. It is like, I don't even know what to say. I mean, that's why somebody will always look forward to that record. I get emotional about things like that. So I'll always look forward to the next record. Thank you so much. And I think besides everybody here as well, because everybody has had an impact in my life, you know, from Mosquito, from everything. You know, we've done so many things together. And even though some we met on the way, it doesn't matter. It's not where we started. It's where we met and where we became one. And that has actually carried us to who we are, you know, which is very special. And it extends out of this room to so many people. And, you know, I think let's continue and you know, one family.
Vinny.
Louis, you know, we talk all the time. Thanks for this, Fresh. Thanks for this. And, I mean, it was your idea to get us all here together to have this convo. Yeah, it's all about the music, the love, the friendships over the years. Yeah, man, we keep on going and we ain't stopping.
Yeah.
Yep.
Stopping. Guys, I need to thank all of you guys. I'll try to keep it as short as possible. Again, it's another full circle moment for me because all of you have been heroes to me in one way or another, you know, since I was a teenager. And I told Greg the story the other day that one full circle moment for me was when I was 11 years old, I used to listen to WBLS Master Mix with Ricky Ricardo. There was a recording on a cassette tape of that show on WBLS from 1984. And listening to that, I was like, this is how radio should sound.
Yeah.
This is how mixed shows should be. And I didn't know that in 2010, Louis Vega, whose music I was buying since I was 15 years old, would be interviewing me on WBLS.
Wow. Yeah.
So you've been part of a lot of full circle moments of mine, Louis. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank you for that. And often we need full circle moments to remind ourselves that we're on the right track.
Yeah.
That it's not a mistake that we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's not a mistake that you might have defied your parents to do what you're doing right now. And we all need those moments, and I think we all have those moments. Yeah. And the fact that I contacted all of you guys literally at the end of yesterday to say, today we're recording, guys, and you all showed up. It's very rare to have those kind of people in your circle that will drop everything or re-shift their days to make sure that we can all get together and just break bread for a day or two, for an hour or two. But also, I told you guys, listen, Louis wants to see you guys tomorrow. So that also counts for something. But thank you very much, guys. You've all contributed one way or another to my career. And I thank you, guys. Julian, dude, you've only just begun, bro. No, if you think you kick ass, you're just scratching the surface, dog.
It's going
to get worse.
Thank you, bro.
Appreciate you. Keep doing what you're doing, Saki. With you, because I think you're a special talent that the world is yet to discover.
Absolutely.
Because you write, you know, a lot of people write at us. You almost speak to our souls and our spirits. Very few people can do that.
Yes.
Very few people get that right.
Yeah.
Where you feel like this person is actually talking to me.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the crowd and you feel like the artist is talking to you, your music does that for a lot of people. And I think keep writing at that deep level, because there's nothing superficial about your talent, about what you do, and about how you just heal people. And keep doing that, please.
Thank you.
That's the word, heal.
We got. Shout out to you guys. Thank you. And to the team. Guys, you guys put this together literally in less than 24 hours. Yeah. So shout out Trevor, Pezulu Works, the entire team. Even Botsang is here because he's a Louis fan. Next time we'll talk about the politics of dance music.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, guys. Any last words? Are we done?
We're good. Yeah. I mean, yeah. This is there'll be more of these.
Yeah.
Right. In different, you know, the stories are plenty.
Yeah.
You know, there's a million and one things that we haven't talked about, but I think the important thing today, like I said earlier, is really about, you know, when you had your hand on the handle of the door.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Yes.
Right. And I mean, all of you flung those doors open. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Louis, you did that for our scene globally. That's big trust, you know, to do that. We did a lot of stuff on radio. We flung doors. That was big trust, you know, and that, you know, I think, a positive whirlwind is still, you know, kind of carrying on. We're working on a new radio project. Mm. The music had lost a home, you know, for a while, and now it's about to, you know, come back, you know, and kind of carry on. And that's why I said this is only the beginning.
Mm.
Yeah. But thank you all.
Thank you.
Peace.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for tuning in this extraordinary roundtable and edition of Wow, What a Week. Shout out to Pezulu Works, Trevor and the crew for making this happen. Shout out to Louis. You only ever stay at African Pride. Do you have shares here, Louis?
That's Greg's fault, man. Greg.
Shout out to African Pride Hotels for allowing us into their space, and to the team, Keletso Modisa King, executive producer, Lati doing all of the behind-the-scenes shooting and some of the production of the show. And most importantly, to you lovers of house music, we are because of you guys. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.